Hello, everyone. Welcome to Pump the Brakes. I'm Britt McHenry, and we are restarting this podcast to deliver comedy. Surprisingly, I can be funny outside of viral moments on the internet, and sports information, news coverage, even things as mundane as dating experiences and life experiences, travels I go on. I really wanted to find a place to deliver a lot of that information and answer a lot of questions that I get. So here we are. It is back. Pump the Brakes is a title that I used, we'll say used, not ripped off, from one of my favorite movies, which is Forgetting Sarah Marshall. Favorite comedy, probably of all time, and a top five movie of mine of all time. But it just is so fitting. I say it often if things are getting out of hand or if a joke is a little crazy. It's just like, whoa, thank you, Bill Hader, who's in that movie. Like, pump the brakes. So we're going to accelerate, though, now and dive into a lot of things. But the reason, if you followed me, that I've been a little bit absent or gone is because I have had a long TV career and media career, but about 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, I finally settled a very large case against one of my employers, which I am not at liberty to discuss legally. There is an NDA, so we won't get into the weeds of that, but it was not dismissed. It was heavily settled, let's put it that way. And it was the most difficult psychological thing I've had to go through in my entire life. And at the same time that I was battling workplace harassment and struggles, I also discovered I had a brain tumor in March of 2020, which my neuro doctor said could have been in my head ever since I was 8 years old. It was an astrocytoma tumor. So for those of you not in the know, which was me prior to discovering this brain lesion in my head, it's a very slow growing type of tumor. And it safely was more benign in the scale that they have of grades 1 through 4. It was about a 2 with a little bit of 3. With a little bit of 3, meaning there's just constant supervision. So in really a week span of discovering that I had a brain tumor, which is beyond sobering and frightening to say the least, I then had surgery at Johns Hopkins, an 8-hour brain surgery. So literally, as I was fighting demons psychologically in how I was being treated and what I was going through, excusing it as stress symptoms, which I think we all often do. And if you're doing that and experiencing any sort of migraines, any sort of fatigue or sickness, I'm here to tell you, I wish you the best, but go to a doctor, get it checked out, because that's what was happening with me. And while I was experiencing everything psychologically that was very difficult, I also had physical impediments. And it didn't help that when I had brain surgery on March 4th of 2020, my doctor, my neurosurgeon, ended up contracting COVID 4 days later. And if you recall correctly, in that wonderful time we call the pandemic, everybody else went into lockdown. So while I was going to have to sit and stay at home for 6 weeks, the whole world all of a sudden was staying home at the same time. I wouldn't wish it on anyone, but we were in that lifeboat together. Was self-medicating a little bit with alcohol, a little too much. I think we all were. Not that there isn't some right here now. But it was a really hard time to recover from that, to go back on television 6 weeks later, just 6 weeks after having my skull cut open, and then settle a case which affected not one, but two of my jobs, because both were under the Fox corporate umbrella. So that is why I settled and had to leave both of my jobs, including my local news job at the time. And I was very reluctant to get in front of a camera. But here I am. You know, it's hard when you do something that you love so much and you want to connect with people. You don't have the confidence to do it. And for a while, I wanted nothing to do with TV, with media, with bullies on the internet. It just all really sucked the life out of me when I started this career at 22 with so much life, so much joy and life. I felt like I had lost that. But she's back. It only took about 2 years, but I also was afraid to really share my thoughts and my jokes because you never know how people are going to react. And I think often we stereotype individuals we see and we say, oh, they're an athlete, so they can only talk about sports. Or, oh, you know, she covered political news. She's in this spectrum of voting and she believes this about political issues. And really nobody got to know me. And so that's the point of this podcast, but it's also very vulnerable to put your crazy stories out there. So we're going to bring the spice and flavor and start this out fresh 2 times a week. And just, I want to be able to be me. So if you're down for the ride, you're here for the redemption arc, then continue listening because the next thing we're going to talk about involves sports and dating. Because, hey, why not catch you up there too? Now, this podcast is coming back new and improved. I started it about 2 years ago with a good friend of mine, and we did a few episodes, but it didn't quite hit the mark. And at the time, I didn't know what that mark would be. To be frank, there are tons of podcasts out now, right? I questioned whether my voice would matter, what would differentiate me from anybody else, and also how would I appeal to a broad, wonderful social media following I have across platforms, from diehard sports fans to political junkies to news fans. I've kind of covered the whole gambit. And it's thanks to my friend TJ, who's producing this, who said, I think you can do it. I think we can do it. Let's take a run at it. So what we plan on doing is releasing 2 episodes weekly, Monday and Thursday, at least taping tentatively on those days. This, of course, is the reintroduction. Allow me to reintroduce myself podcast episode, but I plan on having several high-profile guests from different sports, whether they're athletes, TV broadcasters I've worked with, therapists, even for some issues with women like fertility specialists. I have frozen my eggs. What's the IVF process like? Doctors that I've had. What do I expect at certain ages? If you've gone through any trauma or any significant illness, like I've been there. And I've gotten all these questions on Twitter and Instagram about how to handle other similar situations people are experiencing. And I think this will be the place that will encapsulate all of those feelings, all of my guidance. And again, I'm just a diehard sports fan, which has been wonderful currently with the Olympics. Amazing photos that came out of Paris. Although I do question for the opening ceremony why we had almost 600 athletes getting torrentially soaked in the rain on a boat. Like, they should be on a yacht because it's the United States of America. Whitney Houston, Star Spangled Banner, Ray Charles, America the Beautiful. Listen to those 2 songs. It will get me as patriotic as it comes. But Coco Gauff and LeBron James did their thing holding the American flag. It really was an iconic visual and photo. I didn't get as upset as other people did. And maybe that's just the Twitter X microcosm about mocking Christianity. And I know many people felt those ways. So, like, we can discuss that at another date. But to me, I just was a little disappointed in the boat brigade of the Olympics. but I'm impressed with the South Sudan, Luol Deng, fundraising that team for 4 years, the United States of America in an exhibition match only beating them by 1 point when this is supposed to be the dream team times four. No team will ever compare to 1992. Magic, Michael Jordan, and Larry Bird, and Charles Barkley. If you know, you know, you're probably nodding ahead to this, but it's a great team. And so there's plenty of content to come covering the Olympics and the US Open. I just got back this summer from London and Wimbledon. I feel like I need like a tea, like a nice little teacup and an ascot hat to talk about my experience in London. So let me break it down for you without those props. I've been to London several times before. I was on the fence about going to Wimbledon because it's really expensive. We talked about it. It's really expensive. So I didn't know whether or not I would want to do it. If you're not familiar, there are four Grand Slams. There is the Australian Open that starts the year in January. There is the French Open in May. There's Wimbledon, which I believe used to start at the end of June, but this past summer, it was July 1st to the 14th. And then there's the US Open to cap it all out in New York in the end of August. I will be going to the US Open, and I'm very excited about that because I'm going to interview as many TV broadcasters as I can, Trey Wingo, who I used to report for NFL Live on ESPN, a slew of current and former tennis players, and everything in between. So that, don't hold us to it, it's a new podcast, Rebirth, but TJ and I want to make a live experience as possible. That is in New York. Wimbledon is outside of London, in London. French Open is in Paris. Go figure with the name. And Australian Open, if I have to explain that, we have some questions about your curriculum, okay? Australia, clearly. So I said, because I have been to the French Open and I've been to the US Open, this is a bucket list item. I want to go to Wimbledon. I went to those former tournaments because I was dating a tennis player 6 years ago. It wasn't as enjoyable. He wasn't as enjoyable. Hope he's doing well. But this one would have been a treat for myself because even though it was expensive, I would pay for the experience. And going into it, there's a queue system, and then there are the exorbitant price tickets, okay? I ain't gonna lie to y'all. Wimbledon was harder to get tickets for than a Super Bowl. I have been to a Super Bowl. Granted, I was a lowly intern at all of 22, but I was at the Super Bowl between the New England Patriots and the New York Giants. The famous catch. Giants came back to win it. It was surreal. Surreal. In fact, if I remember correctly, in the underground, the terminals of the stadium, at that time, because we're going back in time a little bit, all the TVs were severely delayed. There was a 10-second delay. So we just heard the crowd erupt in that Super Bowl, and we knew something happened. And all of the press, if you're unfamiliar, they gather like a cattle call, ready to go out on the field. We thought New England had won. Clearly, it was the big, famous catch that would do it. So New York won. It was one of the coolest sports experiences I've ever had. Point being, I went to that at 22 and I'm spoiled. I'm thinking, I've worked in sports media. If you're unfamiliar with me, I worked local sports in Washington, D.C. to ESPN. Then I was at Fox News in my career and Fox 5 in D.C. So I'm thinking I know enough people in sports. Someone can get me a discount. Someone can get me free tickets. No. No, nobody did. So I did the very tacky, some may call it, I call it resourceful thing, of going onto my Instagram account and posting an Instagram story, essentially pleading for anybody if they had Wimbledon contacts. I did that. I reached out to Tennis Channel anchors. They didn't have any. They said it was difficult. I reached out to former SportsCenter anchors. Nobody could give me the plug. Nobody. It is that hard to get into. I initially get quoted crazy amounts of money, okay? I'm talking $4,500 a ticket to go to Center Court. And I'm like, that's way too expensive. You know, why don't I go to Asia? Why don't I go to Tokyo in Asia? Why don't I go to somewhere exotic and crazy? Because if you put a pin on a map, me, Britt McHenry, I will go there. I waited on it. I had a sorority sister, Alani, if she's watching and listening. She is so gorgeous. Oh my goodness. She was one of the sweetest girls I ever met in college. She was 4 years older than me. And she messages me. So my Instagram story worked. You miss 100% of the shots you don't take. Thank you, Wayne Gretzky. So I took it. She messaged me and said, hey, my friend Jessica runs these tours for the Grand Slams and a bunch of high-end tennis or golf tournaments, rather. Here's her number. You should connect. So I connect with her. Very sweet girl. Beautiful girl. I really didn't get a discount. It was through Max Sports. I can include the link or try to in anything we post if you're interested in going to the Masters or going to any of the Grand Slams. And what they do is basically in the package, they include a certain amount of hotel nights and your ticket. And it was pricey. It ended up being around $4,500, but that included the hotel for 4 nights. So I said, okay, I guess this is my big trip for the summer and the year. Let me do it. It's bucket list. I want to go to Wimbledon. I book it and I'm euphoric. I basically plan my outfit out in advance. Any men listening, I'm sorry, it's what we do. If you have a wife or a girlfriend, you can relate. That's what we do. And I get this beautiful blue crisp dress that's longer length. I find these Manolo Blahniks, girls will know, that were on sale. That's girl math. You can have $1,000 shoes and that's about what they were priced, but if they're on sale for $650, you think you're getting a deal. I saw the $650 sale, bought them. Did I actually wear them to Wimbledon? Absolutely not. And you know why? I'm going to tell you right now. All of these fashion influencers, content creators that tell you to wear, and by you, I mean women, stilettos, pumps in the club. No, they are girlfriends or wives of the tennis players, or they are perhaps media. I don't know if I knew any media working this Wimbledon. I knew one person, but he's a man, so no intel on the female insight. They're probably getting black cars, tournament cars, dropping them off. If you don't have that luxury, which is me, you have to take the tube. Now, the tube, as an American, I'm going to say it right now, is not as great as every UK person makes it out to be. You would think by listening to London and English people, and I say London because, you know, that's the major city, but there's so many other little towns around London and it's different than English men and women in the north. You know, America is different in different parts of the country. They rave about this too. Rave about it. And it's just a subway. It's just a train. They take Apple Pay, so that's good, but nobody speaks. It's not like America in general in London. The amount of times that I would be told without speaking, because you're listening to me now, if I speak, it's very evident. The amount of times I would have a Londoner look at me and say, oh, you're American. It's quite obvious. Was more than 20 times. Now, yes, I do love my hair dye. I do like to recreate Jessica Simpson and Britney Spears in the early 2000s. I love being a blonde. I also have had intensive orthodontic work done, which, in case you're unfamiliar, that's not really covered in the universal plan of healthcare in the UK. Hence why generally Americans have a little bit better teeth. I know someone from the UK is going to comment on this, but it's a truth. And I'm 5'10", very tan. Another realization I had, the sun truly doesn't come out in London. Like in July, 4 days straight, I was there for 5 days. It was cloudy, dreary, and rainy. And if you think I'm complaining, even some of the tennis players on tour, when they lost and finished up at Wimbledon, went straight to the south of France and were complaining about it too. But the experience itself, surreal. Back to the fashion girls. Thank goodness, working enough sporting events, I brought those Manolos, I put them in my purse, and I wore sandals. Thank goodness. Because if I hadn't, I'm going to keep it real with you. It's more efficient to take the tube there at a certain stop, I think it's Southgate, and from there, it's cattle call times 300, mobs of people walking off the tube straight into Wimbledon. The advantage of the queue is if you do spend an exorbitantly priced amount on a ticket, you just get right in. If I was to do it again, because I'll get asked that question, I would say do the queue, because I had friends over there that I didn't even know were going to be there who did get in through the queue. Now, with the queue, you do not get lounge access, which I had. You do not get sort of a first class appeal of it all. You can't go to center court, and I don't know if you can go to first court. But you get to see top 20 ranked players on the side courts, and it could actually be a really fun event with your besties if you choose to do that. But in my mind, I'm like, I'm going to keep it real. I have been accused of being an elitist. When it comes to camping, yes, I am an elitist. I do not want to show up at a bucket list item of fake bougie wealth on my part, looking like I haven't slept in 2 days and sweating through my clothing, right? So I didn't do the queue. But then I saw how easy it was to get in. And unlike the US Open, they allow people from the queue to come in later in the day. So much so that I commented to Jessica, my sorority sister's friend, who was running the Max Sports Tour. It's gotten more crowded here as the day has gone on. What is that? And she said, which is truth because it happened to me, when you leave Wimbledon, they will take note of your absence, and or people wait outside around Wimbledon and just try to snag anyone they see that's nicely dressed leaving to say, hey, can I take your ticket? That happened to me. Ordinarily, I would always get my ticket, but it was like a VIP type of ticket. And I'm sorry, girlfriends, if I spent $4,500 to go to Wimbledon, you ain't getting that ticket. I'm a woman of the people, but I was not giving that ticket away. So that was my day. And coincidentally, I went the second day, which was supposed to be not as good, quote unquote, as the first, because Carlos Alcaraz, who's ranked third in the world and won Wimbledon, he played on the first day. But I got to see my favorite player of all time, Novak Djokovic, play at center court. Let that sink in. You don't even have to know tennis. Novak Djokovic, I love him. He's Kobe Bryant in tennis form. He takes the criticism, the boos, and he almost becomes a better player, as good as he is, because of it. And I'm someone that has gotten a lot of hate online, so I appreciate anybody that puts two middle fingers in the air and wins. So with a knee injury, 3.5 weeks out of surgery, no, he did not win Wimbledon, but he made it to the Wimbledon final against a 21-year-old. That is incredible. The day I saw him play, he made a ranked, I think it was like 123 in the world, but still, 123 in the world, a 27-year-old guy. He made him look like he was 14. That's how good Novak is. So I got my day of tennis. I'll conclude this London tour because I feel like the ladies and some of you men ask me want to hear it. I am single. And I've always had a rule not to set dating apps to the United States. First of all, I have been told by friends that I've been catfished on dating apps. By catfish, like someone has literally created an account with my photos from Instagram. But I figure, cheerio, chaps. Nobody knows me in London. Hell, I'm pretty washed as it is right now. Why not? So I set a Hinge to London. Before I go, a couple days out, I see one guy, he's pretty cute. I decide to match with him. He's younger, though. I am loving to believe that I look, you know, late 20s. Just turned 38. He is 30. Oh, but I love blondes. I do. He was bleach blonde, naturally, blue eyes. Very cute. Very cute. But very aware of that. We meet. We go out a couple times. But I was only in London for 5 days. I did notice when he took me to a rooftop bar that, and I've never noticed this with men, I'm not a big, like, watch if they're checking people out type of person, because we're all human. If you see someone attractive walk by, like, if you say you don't look, come on now. But it was very obvious he kept staring at girls walking to the bar to the point where I felt really uncomfortable because I'm not going to say anything. I'm not dating this person. But I did notice that in a way that I never had with any date ever. But I let it slide because I'm like, it's just like my little London boy, Taylor Swift, you know. You know I love a London boy. Anyone who knows I can't sing, I'm sorry for that. So we continue to hang out. And I would say it was Sunday evening after England narrowly beat Slovakia in the last of group play. They played horrifically. I played Division I college soccer. Okay, small school, but I played soccer. It was one of the most boring matches, and most of their games were very boring. I don't know how you have the talent England does and come up with those results. Again, UKers come at me. The Harry Kane era is about over. Jude Bellingham is your savior, which he was that day. He scored a bicycle kick in the 90th minute, and then they won an OT. Point being, a lot of beverages were had everywhere around the city. And I will say, to get into a bar, it was difficult. You had to have a reservation like you were Leonardo DiCaprio in New York City. Like, it was very difficult. So I just crawled into some local little bar by my hotel and had some drinks, and everybody did. They started celebrating, so I had a few beverages. I believe he did too. We start out in a normal conversation. He like laughed at one of my Instagram stories. And at that point, ladies and gentlemen, TJ and I talked about this. If you have beverages and some drinks, go to bed. Go to bed. Do not continue a conversation with a person. Just go to bed. Guess who didn't go to bed? Me. And so my sarcasm, which I hope if you're listening, you'll get to know, is very high. I joke so much, and that's why I'm excited about this podcast, because I want people to see that side of me. I make some jokes. I essentially said, oh, I guess I'll give your ticket to a homeless person on the Thames. No worries. You don't have to come tomorrow. I'm leaving anyway. I try to like go hardball. Like, oh, I don't care. We were supposed to go on a boat dinner cruise that moi paid for the next night. The night before Wimbledon, and Wimbledon was my last day. And then I was leaving that Wednesday. Those tickets were about $130 a person. Okay. Like, they were not cheap. And in case you have not been on the Thames in London or England, or the Seine in France and Paris, they're very brown, murky rivers. Like, I thought for a few times, is a body going to be drifting by us? Like, it's not the Caribbean. And again, it was rainy in July. I don't know how you people do it there. I get seasonal depression if it's rainy and snowy 3 days in a row. Like, so I show up. I text him. I say, hey, here are the coordinates. I haven't heard from you. You still want to come? He tells me he's not coming. Now, I am very much a person who travels alone, can go places alone, but it's different when you book a honeymoon boat, a couple's boat, which is what it was, or a family boat, and you're by yourself. And I dressed up for it. I wore this red dress, wrap dress, like I was Marilyn Monroe. First thing I'm asked as I show up is from the lovely checkout girls or check-in girls, oh, McHenry, but it's a party of two. I had to look at them and say, no, no, it's just one. And their reaction was, oh, And then there was awkwardness, and they, you know, they said, "Oh, but you look so beautiful." I'm like, "Oh my gosh, I'm be stuck on this damn boat for 3.5 hours now." Get on the boat. They did the move where they sat me, and then they made the dramatic clear of the plates across from me. They cleared the cutlery across from me because I was by myself. I sat on this boat. I guess it was kind of nice seeing the London Bridge, but there was terrible karaoke on the boat. And all I could think of was, like, how did I get here? Why didn't I bolt and abort this mission and just do, like, a pub crawl? A pub crawl on the Thames. Why didn't I go to Mayfair for happy hour to try to find some handsome Londoner that works in finance? Like, I am on a boat to hell on the Thames in the rain. So I couldn't even go on the double-decker part of the boat because it was raining. It was so bad, if you think I'm exaggerating, a husband who clearly got cooked with a few beverages that night, because it was all you can drink, comes over at the end of the boat, about 10 minutes left, sits across from me where my date would have sat, and says to me, "My wife's going to kill me, but I just have to ask, what the fuck happened? Where is he?" I looked at him and I go, "That's a great question. That's a great question. Where is he? Where is he? Where is the proverbial he?" But I can tell you tonight, I got stood up. And he just shook his head and was in disbelief. And then his wife came over and said, "I told him not to say anything. It would embarrass you." And I said, "Ma'am, I'm embarrassed enough. Nice to meet you all." So if you ever feel bad about your dating life, just know that recently I got stood up on a date cruise that I paid for. And no amount of all you can eat and drink, because it's England. So there's no spices and they eat basically fish for everything. No amount of that could mask the fact that I was stood up. I vowed to never be on Hinge again. What the fuck am I doing on a dating app? What are you doing? Why haven't I found the one I thought I did at some point in my life? That didn't work out. I went back on Hinge in New York. But that story, we will tell you on the next episode. I'll leave you hanging with that. But that was my London tour on High Street. I definitely stood out. I definitely watched Top Gun and Top Gun Maverick on the flight home on July 3rd because let that eagle roar. I wanted to get back to America so badly. I was so delusional. I currently live in Washington, D.C. I wanted to go on the National Mall to watch the fireworks. I've lived here for 15 years, never done it. You know why? It's a tourist trap. It's rainy. It's muddy. By the end of the day on July 4th, I came to my senses. I did not go. But that is how much I was sick of the rudeness, curtness, and, like, hate from Londoners. Like, do I need to remind Parisians and Londoners that if it weren't for America, your asses would have been smoked in World War I and World War II? I'm just saying. I've come around. I'm back on the English train. I welcome all listeners and viewers. And I certainly hope that all of you will continue watching this podcast. I've taken quite a break from media. I settled handsomely a legal dispute about 2.5 years ago. I can never get into the details of it because I signed an NDA. It would be illegal to. But it scared me from wanting to open up again. And also I fought cancer at the same time. I had brain surgery and a brain tumor, and I felt a weird sense of, like, I'm not good enough, that I can't connect to people, that I don't have that joy in, oh, I'm gonna cry, I don't have that joy in my soul again. And I have found that thanks to time, thanks to healing. Time does heal all wounds, so does therapy, and some really good friends, including TJ, who's producing this podcast. So I am back. I'm going to stay back. I'm going to give you fiery opinions. And now I'm going to tell you the funny shit that's happened in my personal life that I was always told I couldn't talk about. Because it's 2024 and this is the future and the future is now. So This is Pump the Brakes. Yes, it is from Forgetting Sarah Marshall. I ripped off the line from Bill Hader. And really, it sums up my life of just going 100 miles per hour and needing to pump the brakes. So, stay along with me for this journey. Thank you for listening to this episode. We will have another dating Hinge story that actually is worse than the one I told you, based in New York City. And we're going to get into the Olympics. We're going to get into more sports. We're going to get into a little bit of political coverage with the election coming up, and how some candidates feel about childless women. Why do we always have to have cats? I have a dog. Her name is Foxy. She may make an appearance too. So that's what's on the agenda. Thank you all for listening, and I will be talking to you soon.